Good evening, and welcome to another episode of the Super Mercado Brothers Video Game Music Podcast.
How's it going, everyone? Happy Halloween!
Yes, today marks the second half of our series of Halloween episodes. Last week we did horror music, and this week we're doing spooky music in honor of Halloween.
Bwahahahaha.
So yeah, basically today we're just going to play music from all type of games. They don't have to be specifically scary games or horror related games, but we're playing music either from scary levels or music like this that's just very frightening and eerie.
Yeah, so it was pretty cool. So last week we obviously played tracks from horror games themselves, and actually not every single track was inherently scary. It just had to be from a horror game.
Right.
And this week, almost none of the games are actually horror games. They're just, you know, scary pieces throughout video games. So there's so many great, spooky, scary pieces in video games. So it was kind of fun going through games that you wouldn't really expect to have much scary music and finding some hidden gems. And then also there are some games that have very well-known kind of spooky tracks.
Yeah,
so hopefully
exactly.
This will be kind of a greatest hits of spooky video game music.
And it's very interesting to see the different compositional techniques utilized by video game composers to make spooky music.
Yes, there's definitely a lot of similarities that you'll hear today. Some similar tools that composers have used to evoke a spooky feel. So we'll get to that later. But how about that opening track? That was the title theme from Super Metroid.
Very spooky. In fact, in my opinion, that whole intro is one of the scariest moments on the Super Nintendo.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Because it starts off, it's very close up, it's sort of cinematic, it shows you little bits and pieces of the environment along with the music, and then when that actual Metroid theme comes in, the dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun, then it sort of pulls back and you see just this one lone Metroid floating around making creepy noises,
yes.
And then these dead bodies of scientists all around.
Can you imagine in 94? That must have just been like rated R almost back then. Like, there's a lot of Super Nintendo games that have really creepy intros. Like, there's a lot that I can think of.
Like Castlevania 4.
Yeah, there's just, I think they did a really good job of having those really atmospheric. And it's cool for games that like had previous games on like the NES, and this is like the first Super Nintendo version.
Right.
Like, they really wanted to make it feel like grown up and like badass. So I think that's cool. But you got any plans for Halloween this year, Will?
I don't know. I really don't know what I'm going to be. I don't like that you have to come up with a new costume idea every year. When I was like 4 through like 6, I was just Superman every year, and that was easy.
Well, you could always bring it back.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if you'd fit in the same costume, but...
Yeah, probably not.
All right, so let's get into it. The first track we're going to talk about today is from Banjo-Kazooie, composed by Grant Kirkhope. This is probably the most well-known track of the game, and definitely the spookiest. This is Mad Monster Mansion. This is Mad Monster Mansion from Banjo-Kazooie, composed by Grant Kirkhope. Definitely uses a lot of kind of scary music staples. The theremin is definitely one. I like in this piece, you kind of hear those howling coyotes in the background. That definitely helps to add to the spooky quality.
Yeah, what I like is, you're right, it's using a lot of old school scary music cliches, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I like about it is some of the instrumentation is very campy and very fun. So it's sort of that very fun sense of spooky.
Yes.
It's more campy, and like the games themselves, where it's very fun and colorful.
Mm-hmm.
I think Grant Kirkhope did a very nice job of blending those two worlds together and making a good song that definitely feels very spooky, but at the same time, using instrumentation that gives it a fun and playful sense, too.
Yeah, he definitely did a good job with that. In some ways, it feels like that was just kind of in him, like that was just kind of his nature, because it feels like this type of style is maybe just so natural for him. It feels like this kind of reminds me of a lot of other games like Perfect Dark and Donkey Kong 64, and it just feels like this is kind of, it's a very natural style for him to compose in this way, so he's definitely the right man for the job for these series of games for sure. But
yeah, I also like how the instrumentation changes up through the song. It's constantly moving, and the melody gets passed around to different instruments, and it's not just looping the same thing. It's really nice, and it sounds very, if not scary, it definitely sounds mysterious.
Oh yeah, it's perfect for a colorful video game. Definitely. Right.
Well, nice. What's our next track, Carl?
The next track is from Super Mario Galaxy, and this is Ghostly Galaxy. This is kind of the Boo's Castle level or galaxy in this game, and I really like the music for this. It's not over the top spooky, so it's not quite as campy as what we just heard, but
definitely fits the levels.
Yeah, and what's really nice about these Galaxy games is you have some great sounding orchestration. Not every track was completely orchestrated, but this one is a nice combination of, there's a few more synth based kind of spacey sounds mixed with some actual orchestral playing. So it's kind of a nice combination here. This is Ghostly Galaxy, also known as Teresa Waltz, composed by Mahito Yokota. Was Ghostly Galaxy, also known as Teresa Waltz, composed by Mahito Yokota from Super Mario Galaxy.
This piece is very effective. It's definitely very spooky, and it has a very ambient and spacey quality as far as the background colors, and there's some of the reverb that's put on some of the instruments.
It's a perfect little melody there on the flute.
Right.
It's just perfect for
it's
what this level
simple, is. It's very
simple,
it's really sparse, and also, like Carl said, the instrumentation is very conservative. It's not all-out scary, but it's not, you know, spooky and campy. Mm-hmm. It sort of fits nicely in the middle. It really works for a Mario game, and it's able to walk that line between being, you know, like horrifying and being like silly.
Yeah,
and I think it does a very nice job of feeling sort of mysterious and wandering.
Yeah, to describe this in one word for me, it just would be classy. It's just a very classy instrumentation and orchestration. It's just really very well done. And it really does add a lot to hear those real instrumentalists playing this piece, what with the strings and the flute. It really does add a lot to this piece. I mean, if you heard the same piece with kind of GameCube quality MIDI, general MIDI, it wouldn't quite be the same. So
yeah, you're probably right about that.
This is a very, very well done track. All right, we're going to move on to an NES game called Mother. And this is actually the predecessor to the game Earthbound, which we'll get to later for the Super Nintendo. So this was the first game in this series. And this was composed by Keiichi Suzuki and Hirokazu Tanaka.
Right.
One of Will's favorite composers. This is a track called Graveyard Theme, also known as A Ghastly Sight. Thank you. This is A Ghastly Sight from the game Mother, composed by Keiichi Suzuki and Hirokazu Hiptanaka. Such a scary NES track, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really impressive for the limited hardware. One of the things that I think is really effective is that sparse use of that sort of snare drum sound.
Sure.
There's not much rhythmic backbeat in that bass line, which is very simple, and there's usually no percussion, but there's occasionally that...
Yeah, so he'll use it on like the first and second beats of a measure, right. But then he'll leave the third and fourth beats completely wide open.
Yeah.
It's really effective.
And it leaves you hanging because there's silence and you don't know what's going to happen. And there's sort of shrieks in the higher register of those pulse channels. And there's also a lot of vibrato on those lead instruments. And I think they're using both pulse channels at the same time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. One thing that I think is always so crazy how much mileage they can get from the NES is with the use of lush vibrato and delay, you can create something that really sounds spooky and kind of has a theremin quality to it.
Right.
And it's really cool that you can do that. You're thinking about the composition in that way and you're thinking about the technical aspects of the instruments. It's so impressive. I'm always blown away with just how much mileage these composers can get out of such a set of limitations. It's pretty cool.
Right.
And one thing that I notice about this piece is the very harsh, hard cutoff and decay of all the attacks. Like you hear the dunk, you hear a lot of this kind of distortion in this piece, which I don't know. In some ways, it makes it scary as well.
Right. And I also like that they use both of the pulse channels for the melody because it's like with a system like the NES, most composers were struggling to how do I create a full sounding piece with only these three channels.
Sure.
But they're actually using two of them just on the same melodic line because for something like this, less is definitely more
You're
trying to create sort of a mood and atmosphere. But what I really respect about it is it also has a pretty memorable melody. I mean, it's very spooky and very effective, much like a lot of the music that Hiptanaka creates. But
another thing I liked about it is it kind of keeps you guessing. You think there's a point in it, it's maybe about 40 or so seconds in, where you think, oh, maybe that's the whole song. Is it looping to the beginning? But then the melody changes. It goes, do-ne-ne-ne-ne. It's like it's like a lot more scary and a little bit faster rhythmically. And it kind of makes you jump a little bit.
Yeah, because there's also the contrast from silence to all of a sudden that loud, piercing, shrill, quick little thematic line. It's very effective.
Yeah, very cool piece. Okay, we're going to move on. Now, for some reason, when I was thinking of spooky music this week, this was one of the first songs I thought of. Don't ask me why. This is a Genesis game called Garfield Caught in the Act. Definitely not a very good game.
Oh, quintessential spooky music right here.
But this is a level called Count Slobula's Castle. And so that's what we're going to play. This game was composed by Dwight Stone and Jeffrey Tavares. Definitely not super well-known composers. I don't know why I thought of this. I think this level in this music is kind of a joking homage to, I guess, Castlevania or other scary video games and scary music. It's a pretty well-done piece. So we're going to play it now. This is Garfield Caught in the Act, Count Slobula's Castle. Cool little part right there. This is Count Slobula's Castle from Garfield Caught in the Act, composed by Dwight Stone and Jeffrey Tavares.
Two things that really jumped out at me. First of all, at the end of the form of the A section, it goes to a chord that almost gives the impression like it's modulating.
Sure.
Which definitely has a very wandering and sort of ambiguous, strange, surprising sound. Mm-hmm. And also, I really like that B section right when we started to fade it down. There were a lot of really nice suspensions going on that sounded very kind of, I don't know, like churchy, I guess.
Definitely. And right here, they really continue that. Yeah, it feels kind of Baroque. It really feels like, and especially the church organ really drives that home.
Yeah.
And for the Genesis, I'm actually fairly impressed with the sound of these organs. I mean,
right.
I think if they were to make this game for the Super Nintendo with the sample channels, they could probably have a lot better sounding organs. But for the FM chip, I don't know, it's pretty well done.
Well, it's definitely very convincingly an organ sound.
Yes, you
which
can
is
tell
very
what
nice,
they're going for.
Because
yeah.
a lot of Genesis sounds, they're sort of ambiguous as to what
sure.
the actual instrument is that it's trying to replicate.
Exactly.
Where this definitely sounds like an organ, and maybe that's just an easier instrument to synthesize on a sound chip, but
it could be. Yeah For some reason I feel like I don't hear this exact patch very much in other games. Like I was kind of impressed by the quality of it. Like I can't think of another game that has that exact church organ, or I mean, I don't know what they would call it on the Genesis, but it definitely sounds like a church organ. That's cool. Very cool piece. I don't think the rest of the soundtrack is anything special, and I think in general that game is not considered to be very, very good. I kind of enjoyed it. I played it when I was a kid. For some reason, when I was young, I had this Garfield obsession. I don't really know. I think it was mainly just because I liked to draw him, like, visually. I just liked the cartoon and stuff, but I never really thought the comic was very funny.
Even though you had, like, every single book of it ever.
Well, again, I think I just had this obsession. I just liked collecting everything Garfield, and I didn't really know why. I mean, I did like the cartoon. I liked to watch the cartoon on TV, and mainly I just liked to draw all the characters.
Yeah, I mean, I think the movie with Bill Murray is just brilliant.
Excellent.
It's brilliant. Cinematic gold.
I find it very funny that Bill Murray's willing to do Garfield movies, but Ghostbusters, no way, man.
Yeah.
Not going to do that. Not going to disgrace my name, but yeah.
Well, I mean, he has to keep his reputation.
Exactly. All right, we're going to move on to a game we opened with last week. This is Grabbed by the Ghoulies.
Another Grant Kirkhope.
Yeah, it's a Grant Kirkhope game. This was for the Xbox, and it's kind of a fun, playful horror game. And we're going to play a track that, for me, it's a quintessential spooky video game music piece. This is Kriven's Quarters.
This is Kriven's Quarters from Grabbed by the Ghoulies, composed by Grant Kirkhope. Again, like the track that we played from Banjo-Kazooie, Mad Monster Mansion, this is going for that same sort of more campy and spooky style that I think Grant Kirkhope likes to compose whenever he does sort of a scary piece in his video games. I think it's really nice, and again, it's a very similar choice of instruments, except this time there's a little more focus on some of those upper strings, and the samples actually sound a little bit better, but in general, I don't think they're trying to go for a realism.
Yeah, I think at this time, this was the best quality samples that Grant had ever used up to this point. But yeah, it's kind of funny that this was a rare game, and out of anyone I could think of, I think no one would be as better suited to compose this game as Grant. So I think it was kind of nice that he was just, you know, he happened to still be working for Rare and was able to compose this game. But yeah, it feels right at home. And actually, this entire soundtrack, we could have picked any of the tracks in this game. They all have a very cool, fun, spooky feel to them. So,
that's great.
Yeah, very cool. We're going to move on to, I love this game. This is Shin Onigashima, a Famicom Disk System game, I believe. And this was composed by the legendary Koji Kondo. And we're going to play a very mysterious, spooky piece. Most of the music in this game is not very spooky. It's pretty upbeat. But I think what I really liked about this soundtrack is it has a very Eastern Japanese sound to it. This is Forest. Thank you. This is Forest from the game Shin Onigashima, composed by Koji Kondo.
This is incredibly spooky. And one thing, we've talked about that lead instrument before when we played another track from Shin Onigashima.
Yeah, this is the disc system lead. Yeah.
But what I like about what it's doing, when it has the sustain note, it almost sounds like there's some form of like instrument switching or attack switching. It feels like the instrument's sort of changing or
kinda
like morphs. Phasing
it
in and
out. It feels kind of like a morph lead, yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah. This is a very impressive sound, yeah. When you listen to some Famicom Disk System tracks and you hear that lead, it's really cool because it still sounds like an NES track, but there's just that level of newness, that something you're not quite as familiar with, that really elevated. And this soundtrack uses that lead all over the place, which is one of the reasons why I was always very impressed
and
by this soundtrack.
I do believe that they had an extra sound channel on the disk system.
Yeah, I think there is four.
Which was one of the reasons why it was so tricky to port a Famicom Disk System game back to the NES.
Oh, yes.
Because it's like, if it wasn't composed with that in mind, sometimes, for example, like Metroid, you can end up with sort of a melodic and maybe good soundtrack, but it just doesn't quite sound right.
Because like you're missing the third like the whole time or something. Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah, there was an additional channel. I noticed that when I listened to this soundtrack and some other FDS soundtracks. Yeah, that's definitely a good point. That would be hard if you composed for the disc system and then had to port it back to the NES.
Right.
Interesting.
Because four channels still isn't very much, so most likely they were utilizing all of the channels. But I feel like in a case like this, definitely some of the channels are just used for delay consistently.
Yep.
And I feel like that low bass instrument, also the instruments just sound better. It doesn't have that vintage triangle bass sound that you normally get from a typical NES track.
It's very close, but yeah, there's something slightly improved about it. I think in this version that they have the soundtrack, if you do notice, there is some like fake reverb that was added after in post just for this soundtrack's release. So obviously if you're listening to this on a FDS, you wouldn't hear that reverb, but it kind of makes it sound more pleasing to listen to. All right, we're going to move to a Genesis game called The Ooze. And this is a pretty cool soundtrack. This was composed by Howard Drosen.
We mentioned him a little bit before when we talked about Sonic 3 and Knuckles.
Sure.
There's a miscredit. He's credited to doing all the music for Sonic and Knuckles, when in reality, that whole group of people that we mentioned before who did Sonic 3, they did the music to both Sonic 3 and Sonic and Knuckles.
Yeah, so Howard, the only music that he actually did contribute to Sonic and Knuckles was the main title theme and the new Knuckles theme.
And I believe part of that miscrediting was due to the fact that originally Sonic 3 and Knuckles, it was going to be one game, and a lot of the music from Sonic and Knuckles you can actually find on the cart of Sonic 3 in the sound test section.
So I think the reason why he was credited as doing all the music is because technically those are the only two new pieces of music in that Sonic and Knuckles,
because they probably wrote all the music for the levels when they were working on Sonic 3.
I think that's true.
When they did the Sonic and Knuckles project, they only all those people were gone, so they just hired in one new guy to do it.
Sure.
And there's probably some errors going on as far as like they probably didn't actually look closely at what music is actually being played in this game.
And just back then at that time, there was a lot of miscredits going on. But yeah, this is a game composed by Howard Drosen. We're gonna play a really cool, groovy, spooky piece called Plague Factory. Love that bass line. This is Plague Factory from the game The Ooze, composed by Howard Drosen. Another thing I love is the quality of that guitar on the right channel, just like an extreme amount of vibrato, like immediately. There's like no time. It's just like that kind of drives home the 50s campy, spooky nature of it, you know, because he didn't use a theremin, so the next best thing would be, you know, that guitar sound.
Right. One thing that I really like about this is musically, I feel like it has something to owe to Castlevania.
Sure.
But as far as like rhythmically and like the style, I feel like it actually has a lot to owe to like Sonic. And it actually sounds kind of to me like this is an obscure thing, but it reminds me of Sonic Spinball a little bit.
Well, that's because Howard Rosen did that.
Right.
Game.
And it has similar sounding instruments. And this part here, it kind of reminds me of Scrap Brain Zone a little bit.
Yeah, I thought that same thing when I first heard this track. It reminded me of Toxic Caves, the first level in Sonic Spinball,
right.
Which makes sense because it was the same composer. But yeah, it's really interesting. Like, if you listen to this and Sonic Spinball and I think Howard Rosen maybe only did one other Genesis game, I think that's enough evidence to make someone skeptic that really, I don't know if he really did Sonic and Knuckles because it really doesn't sound anything like this, you know?
Right.
But yeah, that's a cool piece. I love the tone of that guitar, and it kind of takes a while for you to kind of pick up that, oh, this is kind of a spooky piece. Right off the bat, you may not think it's right. Inherently spooky, but
yeah, this is actually one of the tracks I feel like that I've listened to that I feel would translate really well to like actual, like authentic, real instrumentation,
especially that bass line, Yeah, and then I like the part where there's like one channel is doing downbeats and the other channel is doing upbeats. That's really cool.
Let me just get, because it feels like this is something that you would respond to. Did you really like the da 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 da? Because that sounds like something that you would do in like a Sonic-esque song.
Yes, I love that. Totally love that. All right, we're going to move on to Earthbound, which we talked about. This is kind of the next game in the Mother series. I think some people call this Mother 2. Might also be known by that. But yeah, Earthbound, this is for the Super Nintendo, composed by the same composers as Mother, Keiichi Suzuki and Hirokazu Tanaka.
And again, this is an incredibly spooky track, and they're totally taking advantage of all the hardware potential of the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, very, very ambient. I think for the time, this is probably as ambient as you could ever get for the Super Nintendo. This is 3/Zombie Central. This is 3/Zombie Central from Earthbound, composed by Keiichi Suzuki and Hirokazu Tanaka.
I really love that piercing instrument that just came in.
Yeah. I love the kind of alarm sounds that those atmospheric
sound
effects.
This totally reminds me of like the true realization of Hirokazu Tanaka's ultimate goals, because he's the one who, if you remember, who's credited with saying that he likes to blur the line between sound effects and music.
Sure.
And it's a little harder to do, obviously, on the NES, and it didn't necessarily come across quite that way, but this totally sounds like that. Like Carl was mentioning, those alarmish sounds that are sort of
like, it sounds like it could be in Super Metroid.
Yeah, I mean, some of these, it's like it's blurring the line between, are these sound effects, are these actually meant to be part of the music? And it sort of probably blurs the line in the game of what is actually existing in the environment and what is just meant to be soundtrack. And I think that's really nice, especially for a video game. I think that's really impressive.
Yeah, and I think what's cool is Kenji Yamamoto definitely took that idea and ran with it in his compositions in Super Metroid, for sure.
We kind of mentioned that before, that it's like he really tried to carry the torch of blurring the line between music and sound effects, and he had a lot of sort of catchy, fun musical pieces, but he also had a lot of ambient sort of spacey quality tracks in Super Metroid, as we heard from the first track that we played in with today.
Definitely. Okay, we're going to move on to Indiana Jones in The Fate of Atlantis. We did play a track from this in our computer music episode. This was composed by Michael Land, Clint Bohakian, and Peter McConnell. We're going to play, for me, it just seems like a classic spooky piece.
Right.
This track is called Crab-Like Raft. It's also known as Sophia's Spirits theme. So the first time you hear this track is when you're talking with Sophia, right around the time when you get to choose whatever path you want to be in the game.
Right.
And she's talking to Nurab Sal. She's kind of talking with all her spirits. And this is the theme that plays.
Oh, Nurab Sal. Oh, my God.
This is Crab-Like Raft. Crab-Like Raft from Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis, composed by Michael, Clint, and Peter. This is original Sound Blaster audio.
Nice. Good job, Carl.
Thank you. Yeah. Some interesting kind of harsh cutoffs and decays in this. If you notice, there's some kind of weird cutoff. And again, obviously, we kind of talked about this, but a little bit rhythmically, kind of slightly not perfect, which is something that always will sound like a LucasArts adventure game to me. Because like we talked a little bit about, they maybe performed this on a MIDI keyboard. So there's, you know, some rhythms that don't completely line up, but it's cool.
Yeah, this is just really cool. It's very simple, very effective, but to me, I'm surprised how, like, all of a sudden it just immediately brings me back. And it's hard, like, if you ask me about, like, I would remember, oh, yeah, there's music to this part that's, like, really good.
Yeah, but you couldn't
listening
really...
back to it, it's so much more simpler than I remembered. Mm-hmm. Like,
just
but it's
simple
so
arpeggio based, you know, with you know later on other colors come in, long sustained colors, but
incredibly
effective.
You mean you can't give enough credit to like how nostalgic these instrument sounds are?
Yeah.
I mean, like we played a version that didn't have these, and it's almost barely recognizable.
Yeah, that's a very good point. But yeah, for some reason, this is the most classic piece of music in this game.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Because you don't hear it that much. But
way more iconic than the Indiana Jones theme. I mean, come on.
Oh, that's funny. That actually, I do like the version of that with the Sound Blaster audio.
Right, that does sound great. So I'm actually really excited about this next one. This is like the epitome of goofiness. Mm-hmm. This is the Luigi's Mansion main theme. And what's really funny is Luigi is singing along with it. So Charles Martinet, who does the voice of Mario and Wario and Luigi and what have you, he's actually... doing Luigi sort of like humming along a little bit
and
with
just
the
little FYI, there's no auto-tune in this. There's no pitch correction.
Yeah.
It's not perfect, but that's kind of adds to the humor.
It's very cute.
This might be the goofiest track we've ever played so far in the podcast. This is the main theme from Luigi's Mansion, composed by Katsumi Tataka and Shinobu Tanaka. Yeah. This is the main theme from Luigi's Mansion, performed by Charles Martinet. Composed by Katsumi Tataka from Wave Race 64 fame, and Shinobu Tanaka, who
Mario Sunshine.
Mario Sunshine, yeah.
Oh, this is great.
Very funny.
You know, maybe you guys don't believe I'm being serious, but I think Charles is actually doing a fantastic job, because
he's staying in character.
Yeah, he's doing that. Like when Luigi gets to the high notes, the fact that like he can't do it and his voice kind of cracks a little bit, like that's actually something he does in the voice of the character.
Yeah, it's kind of a Luigi sound. Yeah,
and it's so funny.
It's so
like
cute
as it
too.
Goes on, you can tell he starts to shiver.
Sure. Yeah, it's kind of a cute little effect there. Yeah, this is a fun piece. Very fun piece. This would be a thing where I think this may have been playing during the title screen or something.
Right.
I would just probably stay on the title screen to listen to all of this. It's one of those cool Easter eggs. Very fun.
I always like that when the characters in the game sing their own music.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I can't really think of.
Well, I mean, maybe not
example.
Always in games, but there's sometimes, you know, in TV shows or whatever, where
sure.
like the main character will be like whistling the main theme or something.
Yeah,
I always kind of like that.
That is cool. Okay, we're going to move on to probably for us, like, both me and Will, as soon as we thought of spooky music, boom, this is the first one we thought of.
Right. Well, actually, for Carl, it was the Garfield one, but for me, it was this.
Right after Garfield, it was this. This is Super Mario World Ghost House. And so, obviously, in this game, in like other Mario games, there'd be kind of a main theme that they would do theme and variations on in different levels. And this is, yet again, another variation of that theme. This is composed by Koji Kondo. Here is Ghost House. This is Ghost House from Super Mario World, and the thing that is so effective about this is those the intervals of those kind of metallic sounds.
Yeah, they're actually they're a very closed interval. It's actually a half step apart, but they're spread out over like an octave, so it has that very, very creepy, obviously, as you can hear, dissonant sound.
So kind of, I guess, technically a major seventh apart. But yeah, what's interesting about those intervals, the din dun din dun din dun din dun, they just kind of took that and ran with it in so many other Mario titles, like Super Mario Kart, Mario Kart 64,
right.
Any level where they would have a ghost house, they kind of used that as the foundation.
Yeah.
And what I love about this piece is, again, very ambient for the Super Nintendo, the those kind of coming in and out sounds.
Well, and I feel this is the scariest thing Mario's ever done, and
sure.
this is by far the scariest piece of music in any Mario game. And
yeah.
I think that's really cool because, I mean, it just makes these sections just horrifying. Like, when I see this, I see, you know when they have, like, those hundreds of, like,
yes.
ghosts above your head with the creepy faces and
yes.
stuff? Oh, it's just so scary. And what I like is, obviously, they utilize that theme again that they have all over.
In a very similar fashion as the castle, too.
Right.
Very similar fashion. The minor version of it, yep.
Yeah, it's really nice. Also, like, the great use of dynamic contrast and sort of like a modulation sounding of just going back and forth.
Sure.
And it's really nice because it's not, you don't really know, like, what, you don't really get a sense of like what key it's in because it stays in that major seventh between every interval.
Sure, yeah. But again, what is so masterful about this is, I think other composers, if they were to try to do something like this, it would sound so much more kind of random. Whereas this, it doesn't even sound that dissonant. It still sounds like purposeful, and it makes total sense.
Oh yeah, it's definitely intentional.
Yeah,
and it follows a sort of mathematical structure.
Yeah.
So there's not really anything random about it, but it sounds incredibly creepy, especially for the Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. And I really like it. It's like it's all about the notes. It's all about the notes and dynamics, because there is sort of a consistent rhythmic sense. You have
for me, when I hear this, I think of the huge boo.
Yeah.
Like, and when you turn your back for him,
and he's
like coming towards you.
Or those green, like, bubble things that are just like death.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that sort of that being scary with that consistent rhythmic sense, he uses that in the castle theme, because you notice that.
Yeah, these two themes are
dynamic contrast with that, where you have that sort of soft, sort of frigid little, like, very repeated ostinato, and then you have the boom, 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 and it's really nice how much mileage he gets out of that one theme that he uses over and over again.
Yeah, the ghost theme and the castle theme are pretty epic variations, for sure. Very cool. All right, it is time to move on to our track of the week. This is from Monkey Island 2, LeChuck's Revenge, and we're going to play a version from the Special Edition, which was released fairly recently, and it featured a new redone version of the soundtrack featuring real musicians, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, this is by far my favorite track that we're playing today. I think it's the most memorable. I think it has the best melody, and it's just incredibly spooky.
Yeah, so this is the theme of the Voodoo Lady, and it was featured in the swamp of the second game. So whenever you go to visit the Voodoo Lady, you have to start off in the swamp, and what's really cool is that it starts off just with the lead instruments, the theremin, and then the further you get, the more instruments come in. It kind of adds the reggae backbeat.
Yeah, it's so really effective.
They stay true to that in this version. This was composed by Michael Land, Clint Pockian, and Peter McConnell. Here is the International House of Mojo. This is a cool version. This is the International House of Mojo from the Special Edition of Monkey Island 2. Yeah, and what's really effective is, like we said, it starts off with the lone theremin, and again, you know, theremin is the quintessential spooky instrument, and then you slowly hear the acoustic bass come in,
right,
and the reggae backbeat on the brushes of a snare drum,
right. And I think it's really nice, because this whole game has sort of that reggae backbeat, and that's sort of like trying to have that sort of Caribbean sound. But what's really nice is, like, with this track, it just sounds very spooky. But then you add that, and it even if you don't notice it as a listener, it definitely sort of helps to blend all the music in the game and make it feel of a certain style, even if musically and harmonically it's doing very different things. I think that's a really smart idea to keep that sort of tradition in the Monkey Island games of having that same rhythmic sort of sound.
It just feels like you're playing a Monkey Island game.
Yeah.
Now this is probably the best piece in this game, and for me it's the best spooky music of any game. So It's cool that we got to
play
just, that.
It makes me smile. I don't know. Oh, yeah. There's so many, and they reuse it so much in the other games that I just have so many good memories with hearing this.
I love how much modulation
happening.
I love how much modulation there is
right.
in this piece. There's a lot of space, but the melody has so many of these alternate versions, and it just keeps going and going, and it loops so effortlessly and perfectly because it modulates so much that when it goes back, you don't even know if is this the beginning or is this the middle. Like it's kind of cool. All right, we're going to move on to a Final Fantasy track. This is from Final Fantasy VI for the Super Nintendo, composed by Nobuo Uematsu. This is Phantom Train, and it features some pretty nice train sound effects.
Yeah, there's
in the beginning.
Train track sounds. It's really nice.
Yeah, so here's Phantom Train. Phantom Train from Final Fantasy VI, composed by Nobuo Uematsu.
I really like this one. I mean, it does a lot of very strange and surprising things as far as the chord changes, but it's very effective, and this also uses a lot of dynamic contrast and very scary-sounding melody. Almost sort of cliche, but the instrumentation is a little bit smarter in this, so it definitely feels like it's trying to be authentically scary, and there's not really that sort of campiness associated with some of the other tracks that we played today.
What I think is cool is this is Uematsu's take on scary music.
Right.
In the Final Fantasy world. So it's...
Yeah, I think it's nice. We've gotten to see a lot of the different pillars of scary music. You know, we get to see a Koji Kondo one, Uematsu one. I mean, to me, like Michael Land, that sort of like computer music, that's sort of like another pillar of video game music style. And then we got to hear Grant Kirkhope and... I mean, Hirokazu Tanaka, I mean, I think it's really cool that we're sort of seeing all these different, very classic video game composers, all their various compositional techniques that they use to create a sort of spooky song. And I think it's really cool that we've gotten to hear some from each.
Yeah, definitely. This piece has, I guess the Uematsu moment of this piece, there's always a moment in a piece where I'm like, wow, that's interesting. In the very beginning, it's this... sets up this minor feel, and then he goes this Picardy third right away, and then goes back to minor. That's kind of an Uematsu moment for me. Mm-hmm. But
that actually reminds me a little bit of I think it's Yuzo Koshiro that did that a lot in the East games,
he
would set up like a Picardy third and then go back to the minor one.
Interesting. Man, those Japanese video game composers, what are they thinking? They would fail theory class. Okay, so we're gonna move on to Sonic and Knuckles. And this is the scary level in the game. This is Sandopolis Zone Act 2. In Sandopolis Zone Act 1 is, you know, kind of a desert kind of feel, like pyramids. And then the second act...
Yeah, you defeat the first mini-boss, and then you go inside this pyramid, and it's this very huge, dark inside, and there's sort of these, like, ghosts following you around.
Yeah,
you
so have to keep the light is constantly getting darker, and as soon as it gets pitch black, then all the ghosts come out, and then you have to... It's actually a really frustrating level, but... this is probably the spookiest Sonic track of the Genesis era. Here's Sandopolis Zone Act 2, composed by Sega Sound Team.
Sandopolis Zone Act 2. I really like how it goes back into that loop right there. It's really nice, and it's sort of, when you first hear it, it feels a little bit odd sort of having those same bass notes, but when you loop back into it, it's almost like you have this sort of like moment of, oh, and now you sort of like see, oh, and it really just sort of starts to make sense as the piece goes on.
You're right, it makes sense the second time a lot more. Yeah, it's really effective. Yeah, it kind of wins you over by the second time. Because the first act, it makes a lot more sense musically, because the bass notes change, and the second act, it's definitely a lot scarier.
It has a very shrill melody instrument.
Sure. But yeah, again, very well done orchestration on the Genesis. Very full, lush sound. Really nice delay sounds.
I like that.
Buzzing, piercing qualities.
Yeah, it's really nice. You got like a little syncopation going on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really cool.
I love all the din 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 din.
Yeah. And one thing that I like is in the first act, it sort of doesn't make a lot of sense. You hear the song and it just sounds a lot scarier than it really needs to.
Sure.
Because it's just sort of like a fun desert level, and it feels a lot scarier than most Sonic music. And I think as you're playing the game, it's not really till you get to that second level where that sort of spookiness in the melody and chords really starts to make a little bit more sense.
Yeah, they probably could have had even more contrast from Act 1 and 2. They probably could have gone back to the Act 1 and not made it
maybe
quite
made it
as
like
scary.
Major or something.
Maybe, yeah. I feel like they kind of had this idea first and then just like kind of made the Act 1
Well,
version.
I mean, I know they want to do the harmonic minor thing because it sounds sort of Middle Eastern.
Yeah, exactly.
But, maybe it could have been even more drastic of a change between Act 1 and 2 because in the levels, I mean, they're completely different.
Yeah, that's something I noticed when I did a few tracks where I did Act 1 and 2 versions. And sometimes I had to go, after I made the 1 and 2, I had to go back to the 1 and make it more different.
Right.
Just because it was just too similar. So
yeah.
Cool. We're going to move on to another Grant Kirkhope game. This is Donkey Kong 64. And we're going to play a track called Creepy Castle. This is Creepy Castle from Donkey Kong 64, composed by Grant Kirkhope with some help from Evelyn Fisher.
You know what's interesting is how many spooky tracks use dun 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 dun. Like, I feel like that Fate of Atlantis one uses it a little bit. He uses it in Perfect Dark for Chicago.
And also in Mad Monster Mansion.
Right.
Pretty much every spooky music song. Yeah.
Yeah, the chords definitely remind me of Perfect Dark, and
it also
helps that it's on the Nintendo 64.
This reminded me a little bit of Chicago. Yeah, no, you're totally right. The instruments, it all sounds cohesive, yeah.
I like this part with the sort of snapping.
This is cool.
He really likes using that bassoon a lot.
And he loves doing those trills, too. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, he's very good at writing this type of spooky, campy, fun music. It's really nice, and I think it's cool that he got to work on games like Banjo-Kazooie and
Donkey
Kong 64.
So many of those. We got to do that, yeah. What do you think of this this game? You fan of it?
I think it's a very impressively large game, and it has a grand scope, and I think it looked pretty good when it came out. But I feel like just the core gameplay mechanics aren't that fun.
I agree.
It's
hard to
get
into
bad
it.
Because this actually had a long development cycle, this game, and people were really excited about it because Rare put a lot of time and effort into it.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of one of those unfortunate things. You have a big game with a lot of content, but it's just when the core gameplay mechanics aren't really that much fun.
I agree.
It just feels like a worse version of Banjo-Kazooie, frankly, in some of the platforming. It doesn't translate from 2D to 3D the way Mario and Zelda did.
Exactly. Yeah, I think this actually did come out in like 2000, I believe. Like right. The same year as Perfect Dark, which is crazy. It's pretty late, but yeah, I don't think we have played a Donkey Kong 64 track before, so that's cool to get to play that. Some other good tracks in the soundtrack, too. All right, we're going to move on to Super Castlevania 4. We kind of talked about this a little earlier. This has a very spooky introduction. So.
Yeah, we're actually just playing the intro, and this whole intro, just the visuals, too, is incredibly spooky. If you've not played the game, basically what happens is it's showing text about, like, Dracula and the backstory of, like, vampires or whatever, and then fog is coming in on the side, and as the music keeps playing, just more fog just moves in on the side, and it's just really eerie, and then lightning strikes the gravestone and a bat comes out. It's very spooky, and it definitely sets the tone for a more grittier and scary Castlevania.
So here's a title screen from Super Castlevania 4, composed by Masanori Adachi and Taro Kudo. Very cool.
Yeah, incredibly spooky. I like some of those drills. It's just very kind of spooky. And it actually kind of reminds me of the Super Metroid track, because it does use a lot of dynamic contrast, and it definitely has an eerie sound. And there's a contrast between sort of those higher colors, kind of like in Super Metroid, where you have those sort of high string sounds and very low droning bass sounds. It's really effective.
Yeah, for Super Nintendo especially. And also cool because it's like, you know, you'd previously played, what was it, Castlevania 3, maybe for the NES, and then when you go to this one, it's like, wow, I'm entering kind of a new era of Castlevania.
One thing I like is that first actual, like, gameplay track that you hear, you get the illusion that it's not going to be fun and campy like the other ones, because it starts kind of like this intro does, where it's a little bit spooky and eerie, and then it goes into dun, 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 dun.
And then it has my favorite moment. Dun, dun.
Yeah, Carl likes.
That's like one of my favorite moments.
Yeah, that's really catchy.
Cool. We're going to move on to the last track we're going to talk about today. This is from Devilish, and this is composed by Hitoshi Sakimoto. This is Stage 5 Seaside. Stage 5, Seaside, from Devilish, composed by Hitoshi Sakimoto.
You know, I really like this track. It's very nice, very subtle. To me, it sounds very reminiscent of PC-88 music, because of its use. It uses that 8-bit PSG channel a lot, but also I feel like doubling on the same notes, there's just a very short sort of 16-bit more piercing attacks.
Well, they use the same metallic instruments that they use a lot in the PC-88, right. And just kind of the writing and
but
stuff.
But I feel like sometimes they're using sort of like an 8-bit sound doubled with a very short metallic sound, because you're just getting the attacks from that metal, but the sustain, if you listen to it, it has a very like 8-bit synthesized sound. It's really nice.
And also just the composition too, which is, it sounds like it could be in a PC-88 track. But yeah, awesome, awesome track. We did play in our title screen episode, if you remember, mm-hmm. we played the intro and title screen from Devilish, which was also very well done.
Yeah.
And this composer, I kind of want to check out some more stuff they did. But yeah, that was hopefully a nice Halloween playlist for you guys. You know, maybe if you have some trick-or-treaters coming over, you can just play some of this music.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely just wanted to set the mood and sort of celebrate the end of October, because it's a very fun time. A lot of spookiness, a lot of dressing up and candy and stuff.
Yeah, and actually, I don't know, Will, if you want to talk about next month.
Yeah, so next month we're doing something really cool. It's our first whole themed month. And due to the release of the new Nintendo console, the Wii U, we're going to have our first ever annual Nintendo month. So from now on, every November will be Nintendo month, just because that's usually when Nintendo releases their consoles. But this month is going to be really special, obviously, because the Wii U is coming out, and we just sort of wanted to, obviously, Nintendo is sort of at the hub of like classic video game music. So we just sort of wanted to have a whole just Nintendo-a-thon and just sort of get it all out of our system.
So every week there's going to be a different topic in the world of Nintendo video game music. But yeah, if it wasn't for Nintendo, we wouldn't have this podcast. So right. I think we just really wanted
And I feel like most video game music would not be the way it is.
Yeah, so we're really looking forward to this next month. And I think you guys should too. It's going to be, we have some really cool things planned for you guys. So yeah, keep it here on the podcast every single Monday. We hope you guys have a great Halloween. We're going to play you out with a track from Rayman 2 called The Cave of Bad Dreams, composed by Eric Chevalier. My name is Carl Brueggemann.
I'm Will Brueggemann. Hope you guys have a happy, safe, and spooky Halloween. Peace out, you guys.